News 101.
Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
You're
in
ready?
Exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
With great humility, I am asking you to be excited.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
And then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host.
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show, and welcome to a Wednesday on the Radio Northwest Network. It is a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to have our network because we stretch out to Oregon, Washington, and Idaho, and we try to provide honestly provocative talk on a daily basis. You want to be provoked? Consider our X poll question today. Would you be willing to drink recycled wastewater? In other words, sewage that's been made drinkable provided by your local government. Now, that one's going to take a little explanation. I'll get into the explanation in just a moment. But I also want to ask you about this. Both Oregon and Washington have these crazy sanctuary laws that do not benefit the citizens of Oregon and Washington. They do benefit the illegal aliens. And now it turns out that Oregon's sanctuary law is actually standing in the way of extraditing real criminals from other places outside the United States to come back to the Northwest and actually stand trial for the crimes they're accused of. I'll get into the details of that as well. First, though, welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. If you want to join what we call the best conversation in talk journalism, it's here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. You can send your emails to talk@larslarson.com. And if you happen to be a naysayer, as you know, we love naysayers on this show. We're going to put you right to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. And you can vote in our X poll. And now I'm going to explain. I got a press release. I'd actually been tipped off to this by some people within the city government who I don't think are very impressed with this idea. But feckless Ted Wheeler, the lame duck mayor of Portland who can't be gone soon enough, although January is going to have to do, he has sent out a press release today announcing the city of Portland will explore, I'm reading directly from the release, One Water as its approach for delivering holistic water, whatever that means, sewer and stormwater services. So I decided to do my due diligence. And I thought, I wonder what this One Water stuff is all about. Because in Portland, I mean, it's different than a lot of other cities, and other cities probably should not copy this model. But they have a water bureau that has always been run by one standard. That is, you collect as much money as you want to charge for the water, as long as all the money you charge the ratepayers gets spent on providing water. You cannot use it as a cash cow for all your pet projects. And if you say, Lars, but you're wrong, they have used it for their pet projects. Well, they have. And in most cases, they got caught. They were forced to pay back millions of dollars because there were, you know, the chumps down at City Hall who say, hey, there's a lot of money in the Water Bureau. Why don't we raid that for some of my favorite little pet projects, whether they have anything to do with water or not? And the city has made some colossally stupid decisions. The current one they're in the middle of is they're trying to build a wastewater filter, not wastewater, a freshwater filtration plant. And you say, why are they doing that? You say, well, because there might be cryptosporidium. And you say, well, has the city had a problem with cryptosporidium? No, it hasn't. Is there a cheaper way of dealing with this? Yes, you could treat the water and cryptosporidium would not be a problem. Or you could build what was originally forecast to be a $350 million plant to filter the water. Only the price has gone from 350 to about 500. I think the last number I saw was $800 million to create a plant to filter the water for a problem you don't have. So understand that while it is an interesting situation, the city gets almost all of its water from one source, and that is the Bull Run Reserve. Giant, beautiful forests, all fenced off, restricted. The public can't go in there without special permission. The water rights to the area deeded over to the city in about 1910 by the U.S. Congress. And it's a beautiful source of water. Now, does the city manage it very well? No, they don't. In fact, it's amazing that over the years, Portland has had, for a place that is notorious for having more rain than it wants in the wintertime, it has some of the most expensive city water in all of America. Famously, it was more expensive than even Phoenix, Arizona, which is notably short of water. But let me get back to Ted Wheeler and his one water approach for holistic water. I mean, the minute you see a word like holistic, you know, there's got to be some liberal nitwits behind this. So I went to the website of the U.S. Water Alliance, which is the group that's pushing this one water idea. It is a private nonprofit organization, and it is largely, I believe, funded by liberals. So I thought, what is this one water thing? And on the site, it says American Rivers, which is another group, left-wing group, gives some examples of how a community can think about changing water management to the one water or integrated approach. And item number one under that headline is wastewater recycled to become drinking water. So I just want to ask you this. Would you be willing to drink recycled sewage provided by your local government? Oh, and by the way, at some of the highest prices you're going to find anywhere in America. That is today's X-Poll. You can find the question at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. And anybody who wants to volunteer to drink treated sewage, I'd be glad to take that call right away. You don't even have to be a naysayer. Today's X-Poll is brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Now, let me get to that sanctuary law. Oregon and Washington have these crazy sanctuary laws. Portland has done the same. So has the city of Seattle. And what do they say? They say that if somebody comes illegally into the United States, that's a crime. And then they work at a job, that's another crime. They use somebody else's social security number, that's another crime. If the employer knowingly hires an illegal alien, that's another crime. So what did Oregon and Washington say? Well, years ago, they passed laws saying that if an illegal alien falls into police custody because they're involved in crimes, that the police are not allowed to tell ICE or Customs and Border Protection. Now, if you say, that doesn't make any sense, Lars, why would they want those criminals to stay around? If they're criminals from outside the country and they're not legally here, why don't we send them home? Well, this is worse than that. Washington County DA Kevin Barton wants to bring back fugitives to face some very serious charges here in the Pacific Northwest. And he says, in the past, we've always been able to work with the federal government and extradite people who fled the country because they're facing serious charges. I mean, that's one of the advantages. If you're an illegal alien, you not only get sanctuary treatment in Oregon and Washington and Portland and Seattle, but if you ever commit a really serious crime, you just run away and it's hard to get you back. But unfortunately, the federal government under the Biden regime has apparently said, we're not going to go forward unless you sign a letter that is contrary to that Oregon sanctuary law. And what Barton says is, I want to be clear. Nothing I'm saying is intended to suggest that sanctuary laws are not a good idea. So Barton is not completely sane. I mean, because that's crazy for a lawman to say sanctuary laws are a good idea. But he says right now he can't get these people back. And one of them is accused of aggravated murder. The other two are accused of child sexual abuse crimes. And he can't get them back because of Oregon sanctuary laws and, of course, the Biden crime regime back in Washington, D.C. Back in just a moment. It's a Wednesday. We'll get to the Northwest nonsense. And I got a couple of thoughts on no tax on tips coming up. And Kamala Harris, you're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
What does Lars think about smoking the devil's lettuce?
I won't go schizo, will I?
It's a distinct possibility.
Now it's time to take a hit of Lars Larson.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to sit.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead fish wrapper or mainstream media bias.
You just got to understand that I love it when Democrats double down on their own hypocrisy and then get wrapped around their own axle. You see, 60% of us never worked a tip job, but 90% of us, including yours truly, leave a tip at least when we dine at a sit-down restaurant. So, President Trump stole a beat on the Democrats by proposing more than 2 months ago no income taxes on tips. It turned out to be hugely popular with voters on both sides of the political aisle. So Democrats spent the last 2 months beating up on the orange man's idea. The powerful Senate Finance Committee Chair Ron Wyden, the senator from New York City, declared it a bogus proposal. So it kind of blindsided the whole Democrat Party when their very own candidate, Kamala Harris, copycatted Trump's idea last Sunday at a rally in Vegas. Sin City, of course, ranks as one of the biggest tip cities in America. Funny thing, 2 years ago this week, the Senate voted on a bill that gave the IRS $80 billion to hire 87,000 new agents. The most hated government agency in America then launched a brand new initiative to crack down on people who get tips and then don't pay their income taxes on them. Kamala Harris had cast the deciding tie-breaking vote to turn that into law, to give the IRS money, and to go out and start cracking down on people who are not paying their income taxes. Democrats have to have double standards or heck, they'd have none at all. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now.
I want to give the grill to the Tiger Tualatin School District here in the Pacific Northwest. They're being sued for almost $4 million. And in this case, while I'm not a fan of lawsuits, I think these people deserve to win. A male student, according to the suit, was allowed to enter the school's gender-neutral bathroom and rape their teenage daughter. And the schools haven't changed anything to fix that. Tiger Tualatin School District is now being sued by the student who was allegedly raped by another student. They say the school district was negligent. I'd say it was worse than that. Negligent means not paying attention. When you actually adopt policies that say that people with mental difficulties who think they're the opposite gender can use the same bathrooms and locker rooms and restrooms as your daughters, that puts them at risk. The district should know that. And they should get sued. They should lose in this case. They get today's grill. Today's best email, but you can always send more. Marilyn writes, and Lars, I was driving today and I caught part of the story that you talked about with patients at mental health facilities who had been enabled to vote. Just so you know, Oregon is ahead on that game. In 2020, I was trying to help somebody, a friend, get back on their meds and get their life back on track. So I took them to a drug crisis center in one of our three counties for an orientation. We sat across from the mental health worker whose very first question was, are you registered to vote? Do you want to register? Now, Lars, I hadn't planned on speaking at all, but I was aghast. After all, I was helping somebody who had been off their psychotic meds for 2 years. I asked, that's the first question you have? He said, I have to ask that question. To which I replied, well, that explains a lot. Have a nice day, signed Marilyn. I think that's a result of what Joe Biden began calling at the very beginning of his time in office back in January of 2021. He called it a whole of government effort to go out and get people registered to vote, even apparently the crazy ones. Now to your calls. Let's start with Lee. Hey, Lee, thanks for listening in North Bend on the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
I'm calling about the reclaimed water. Are you familiar with the Santee Lakes project in Southern California, East County?
I am not. I am not.
Okay, that was initially initiated in the late 50s, okay, and I'm 71 years old, so I went to grammar school around there.
Yep.
And we went and viewed that lake, and the whole thing was reclaimed water, okay? They tested it, and it was actually cleaner than, you know, the tap water that we got and everything else, but because it was, you know, effluent or reclaimed water, nobody would drink it. Okay,
right.
So I'm sure technology has made the water much cleaner. I know it's kind of a weird thing for people.
Well, I'd ask you straight out, Lee, if they said we're going to take wastewater, we're going to treat it, and then we're going to put it out as drinking water, would you drink that water?
Possibly. Like I said,
not a positive yes. See, I understand that all
no way.
All the water we drink is ultimately reclaimed. I mean, everything that goes out of a city goes down the river all the way to the ocean, and at some point evaporates, at which point it becomes effectively distilled water, and then falls somewhere and rolls back again. All of humanity lives on about 2% of the water on the planet. That's the amount that's fresh water at any given time. But this idea that a place like the Northwest, that is notorious for having more rain than we know what to do with, is going to suddenly say, nope, we're going to recycle the sewage, and we're going to put that in the pipe, and we're going to charge it top dollar for it. That one doesn't work for me. Let's go to Colleen. Hey, Colleen, welcome to Wednesday on the Lars Larson Show.
Hi. Yes, I kind of maybe a naysayer, too. I drive by the clean water treatment plant here in Hillsborough several times a week, and I was always under the impression that they treat the water, and it was sewage water, and that we get it. So if they treat it, what do they do with the water if we
they dump it in the river? That generally it goes into a river and it goes downstream to the ocean, and at some point, as I said, it evaporates and comes back. That's how the cycle works. But what they don't do, and I've talked to the people in sewage treatment, and they'll say by the time we have treated sewage, when it comes out the pipe into the local stream or river to make its way back to the Pacific Ocean, they'll tell you it is clean enough to drink. My only question is, would you drink it? Would you drink it?
Yeah. And the other thing, too,
well, would
the
you?
Likes of the Biden administration, would they, could they be lying to us and telling us they're not giving us just that kind of sewage-treated water and do it anyway?
Well, fortunately, the Biden administration is not in charge of water, or it might be as screwed up as our southern border. Who's in charge of our water is your local water utility. Although I always point out to me, if you say, almost all water in America goes to cities from government facilities like water districts. About 8% of America's water comes from private companies, and it's actually better than the stuff that the cities hand out. Let's go to Rusty. Rusty, we got about a minute to the break. What's on your mind?
Well, against my better judgment, my son, he's a diabetic, so I got to take him up to Portland. I live in Medford. There's signs on the back of public restrooms up here. If you're talking about drinking water, there's signs up there that say this is not clean enough to inject. Please know not use the toilet water to inject your drugs. So
you're
not drinking it. These people are like, they're not going to put up signs to tell them not to inject it. I mean,
yeah. And that sounds like pretty good advice. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I know there are uses for gray water like irrigating and things like that. I don't think people want it in their drinking water. And good luck with your son and his treatment and all. Rusty, thanks very much. It's a Wednesday. It's the Lars Larson Show. It's the Radio Northwest Network. It's your opportunity to call in and talk. 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Coming up, we got to talk about a ballot measure to tax corporations and pay you $1,600 a year.
The Lars Larson Show. Facebook, X, and Google may censor you, but you'll never find censorship here.
Don't censor me!
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on the Radio Northwest Network, and always glad to get to your calls. I'll get back to those in just a moment. I've been talking sewage and recycled water, in case Nigel Jaquas wants to know. Nigel is the Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter at WWeek.com, Willamette Week, and Nigel, I guess for all those people who have been concerned about the great American divide right now, left and right, Republican and Democrat, Oregon has actually found something that's going to be on the ballot in which both the Republicans and the Democrats agree.
Yeah, it's Measure 118. It will be on the November ballot. And the premise of this is that we would institute a new 3% gross receipts tax, effectively a sales tax on all corporations that sell more than $25 million worth of goods in Oregon. That would raise about $7 billion with a B dollars a year, and the proponents would then take that money and write a check to everybody in Oregon, you know, from Phil Knight and Tim Boyle on down to newborn babies, and give them all, right now it looks like about $1,600 a person. And so the story I wrote for today's paper is that not only do Republicans oppose that, Republican leadership, Senator Daniel Bonham, Representative Jeff Helfrich came out strongly in opposition, but all the Democratic leadership and the Oregon Education Association, the statewide teachers union, also oppose it. So it is that rare issue that has united the left and the right, and kind of unusual to see Democrats opposing a tax increase.
Yeah, I saw that too, especially when they see that $7 billion flowing through the government, because God knows what it's going to cost to both collect it and distribute it if this thing got a yes vote. I mean, does it look at all likely to pass? Have you seen any polling that indicates whether or not people are for or against it?
I hear the polling is relatively strong. I haven't seen it. I mean, it's free money. You know, who among us wouldn't like to have $1,600, no strings attached? And it's to every person. So if you're a family of four, you know, that's four times 1600. That's some nice change. So I think it will be appealing to a lot of people who haven't thought through the implications of what this tax would do to Oregon's businesses and corporations, which would be a, you know, kind of a devastating tax increase. So I think it will pull fairly well until the public thinks through the implications of it.
Well, the other piece to this, Nigel, and it's changed in just the last couple of weeks. When they first proposed this, they said the annual payment would be $750 per man, woman, and child. Now it's suddenly more than doubled. How did that happen?
So the proponents of it came up with this in a coffee shop in Eugene, where we all know a lot of great policy is made. And they were using old numbers when they started gathering signatures earlier this summer, and even as late as last Friday, the website for the campaign still said $750. And I called the chief petitioner and I said, hey, I hear you're using a different number, you know, when you're going around looking for endorsements. What's the reality? And he said, our numbers are old. We're going to change that. So I think it's also worth pointing out, you know, the state is still kind of recovering from the last big ballot experiment, Measure 110, which was brought to us by New York money using Oregon as kind of a petri dish or lab experiment. Yeah. This measure was 97 or 98% paid for by a couple of people from California who'd like to use Oregon as a test tube. And, you know, I think we are really, the ballot and initiative system is a grand part of the historical tradition of Oregon, but man, it's being misused right now.
Well, and tell me this, do the sponsors of this, when, and since you've had a chance to talk to the chief sponsor, we've asked, we have not, but I'd like to know, do they understand that when a big corporation, say they stick around and say, okay, we'll pay the 3% on gross, that's not on net, that means you get taxed whether the company's making money or not. And say grocery stores, which might easily fall into that 25 million plus, if their profit margins are less than 3%. If you add a 3% tax on everything, I would suspect that means they'll have to pass the cost along just to stay in business. And who do they pass it along to? All the people who are getting the checks. Do they understand this is kind of a zero-sum game where the money you get is simply going to come back at you in higher prices for almost everything you buy?
They of course deny that. I think that they have a loose grasp of economics because this tax will be passed along, and their contention is that, well, an iPhone or a, you know, any retail product, they don't set prices by state. They set the sellers of those products set them nationally, but we know that's not true. So I think this is magical thinking, and it's really frustrating. I was going to say irritating. It is both frustrating and irritating that this kind of magical thinking is on the ballot, and I hope people will look beyond the obvious attraction of getting $1,600 for doing nothing and think about just what a bad piece of public policy this is.
Okay, I'm talking to Nigel Jacobs. You can find his story at WWeek.com. It's about this ballot measure 118, going to be on the ballot in November for Oregon voters. I'm not an Oregon voter, so I don't have a dog in the fight. But what is their thinking about? Why do they want to hand this cash out to people? How is it they think this will benefit people or benefit society?
There's a concept that you and I may have discussed before, universal basic income, which posits that the best way to help people who are struggling is to give them cash rather than to give them other kinds of government benefits. And so this is a version of universal basic income. That's one of their premises. The other is that there's a big inequality in this country in terms of rich and poor and who has money and who doesn't. And this is a way of redistributing wealth. And they believe strongly in both of those tenets and have tried to combine them in this ballot measure.
But if they go to the grocery store and say the grocery store is just going to eat the tax, take the reduction in profits and pass along, 3% savings to or $1,600 per person to all these people. And like you said, they don't seem to have a grasp of economics, that the grocery store that only has a less than 3% margin, when their cost goes up across the board 3% on everything, on all their gross revenues, that they have to pass it along. The people who get the money are just going to, they're just going to end up paying it in small amounts, but they'll get a big whopping check once a year.
Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense. I mean, the Legislative Revenue Office looked at this and said, look, it is going to be passed along, which is inflationary, and it's going to cost jobs because companies are, they're not paying tax here on profits. They're paying tax on sales. In addition to grocers, there are a lot of other low margin businesses that will be hurt by this. So it's really, and I think I said, but I should point out again, that it is not means tested, meaning, okay, if you want to help people who are struggling, you might try and direct this money to people of low income, but it's going to go to everybody regardless. You know, it's going to go to millionaires, it's going to go to billionaires. So it's really just a poorly constructed piece of legislation.
Yeah, so it may be very and I'm with you. I agree. Everybody loves Santa Claus. If you come saying, hey, just vote for this, and your family gets $6,000 or so every year, that's going to be very attractive unless people think it through. Nigel, thanks very much. I appreciate the time.
Thanks, Lars.
That is Nigel Jaques, the Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter at Willamette Week. I'll tell you what, I'd love to hear from somebody who thinks a ballot measure 118 is a great idea. Another California idea foisted on the Northwest, where we're being treated like the guinea pig for every crazy political idea in the world. Our number is 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And by the way, check out our poll on X. The question today, and I don't mean to be gross, City of Portland says it's going to explore One Water for holistic water, sewer, and stormwater. And the One Water group says wastewater recycled to become drinking water is one of their big ideas. Would you be willing to drink sewage water treated and provided by your local government? I'm going to vote no on that. We'll be back in just a moment. With everything.
Behind the scenes with leading Democrats after the presidential debate.
What's your backup plan? You gotta have some kind of backup plan, right?
No, we don't have a backup plan. This is it.
And this is the best that the U.S. government can come up with?
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Wednesday, live on the Radio Northwest Network throughout the states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho, providing honestly provocative talk on a daily basis. You want to provoke somebody? Would you be willing to drink recycled wastewater, sewage, provided by your local government? Well, City of Portland, Ted Wheeler, feckless Ted, the guy who's the lame duck mayor of Portland, who's going to leave in January of next year, he sent out a press release this morning saying the City of Portland will explore the, quote, One Water approach to delivering holistic water, sewer, and stormwater services. So I looked up the U.S. Water Alliance, which is the nonprofit organization that's promoting the idea of One Water. And they say American Rivers, one of their members, gives some examples of how a community could think about changing water management to One Water or the integrated approach. And it is, wastewater is recycled to become drinking water. So would you be willing to drink recycled wastewater, sewage, as your drinking water source, especially knowing I can't help getting past the part that the Northwest is famous for having too much water. it floods in the wintertime or the spring. We got lots and lots of water. It rains all the time. So would you drink recycled wastewater? I would say no to that. You can vote in the poll at Lars Larson Show on X. You can also find it on my website at LarsLarson.com, and brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Now, yesterday, we asked you, New York City has now decided to make it very easy for even people who live outside the state of New York to get a concealed carry gun permit. Should gun carry permits be limited to only those who live in the state? I said no. I think New York City is right for a change. 87% of you voted no, but a surprising 13% said yes. To your calls now. Let's start with Diane. Diane, thanks for listening on KBND and the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Hi, thank you. Yes, I'm listening to the talk about the water situation and using sewer water for treating the sewer water. The thought is disgusting. So my first thought was, you know, maybe people could take a visit to a local porta potty, maybe on a construction site. That's the first thought that came to mind. And then second of all, I think we should be talking about and revealing what's in sewer water. So you can imagine every kind of filth and disease and blood, medications, parasites. All those things go in, you know, through
methamphetamine and fentanyl, things like that.
All right, it's horrific. And so there's a reason why it has special treatment, and it should never be used for the human body. I think, and then if people would just think about, because there are people who put crazy stuff down in their sinks and toilets, and also you can imagine, you know, people who are in the business of, say, you know, working on people's hair and using chemicals, perm treatments and colors and whatnot, that all goes into the sewer system. So it's really should stay below ground. It should never come into human consumption. And then also, it's really going to increase the value of properties who have their own well water, right?
Do you have your own well there in Bend, by any chance?
Pardon me?
Do you have a well there in Bend, or are you on city water?
Yeah.
Always better water out of the well.
Yeah, you can smell the chemicals in it, just, you know, the chlorine or whatever it is that they put in there. The well water, I mean, you know, and there's a big fight for that, too. So that's going on over here in Central Oregon.
I'm sure it is. And, Diane, thanks for the call. That was very spicy. Let's go to Kevin in Eugene. Hey, Kevin, welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars. I wanted to talk about that water situation, too. Plus, I've got a comment on the tax. So on the water, I've always said I'm fecal-phobic, so no. I just assume not drink wastewater.
That's a good
one. But I did look up, and it shows on, but like my daughter reminds me, Benjamin Franklin once said, don't believe everything you read on the Internet. But I looked it up because I thought Israel actually recycled their water and into drinking water, but that's not the case. They use it for agriculture.
In fact, they use desal. They have desalination plants, and they're very expensive, and they take a ton of energy. But you're right. They do use non-potable water for things like irrigation, but so do we. I mean, farmers use you know, water that you wouldn't necessarily consider drinking water to irrigate their crops.
Right. But Australia does. Singapore does. One of the African countries does, and then it says parts of the U.S. It said Orange County, California, for example, has used a special purification plant to recycle wastewater since 2008 as a solution to water shortage.
Well, here it comes. You can see it coming right now. Let's go to Ken in Whidbey Island, listening on KVI and the Radio Northwest Network. Hey, Ken, what's on your mind?
Well, what's on my mind is septic tanks. You know, having lived in many parts of the country and many years on Whidbey Island, many of us have a septic tank.
Yep.
And that water gets filtered down into the ground and goes right back down. And we drink it over a period of time. It filters itself.
Well, it does that, but when it goes down in the ground, since you're on Whidbey Island, doesn't most of that water end up somehow making its way back to the Pacific?
Well, I suppose that does.
Or does it go into an aquifer?
And it may do that. I'm not sure.
I'm not sure either, but if your city tells you we're going to connect the wastewater treatment plant to another treatment plant, and then we're going to put the water right back in the city's drinking water system, would you be happy to know that?
I'm not sure, but here's the thing also, that over in Everett, Washington, where they have this large sewer system, they do that. They have that recycling center there where over a period of days, I guess.
The Lars Larson Show.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
With great humility, I am asking you to be excited.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
And then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host.
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get your phone calls and emails. I want to talk about a couple of things, and then we'll get to your calls. One of them has to do with the use of wood after wildfires. Because right now, Oregon has now eclipsed its old record for the greatest number of acres burned in a single year. Washington State, not quite as bad. But in Oregon, north of, 1.75 million acres on fire or have burned. And I'll tell you what happens immediately after these fires. Because Oregon now sees an average of 500,000 acres that burn every single year. And on bad years, more than a million. And this year, a brand new record year. And all of us on the conservative side of things say, look, will you at least go out and salvage log the land? Take those trees down. I mean, despite what you might think, it's not like in cartoons when a forest burns up. It's not just ash that's left behind. There are a lot of trees that have a lot of usable lumber in them, and they could be salvaged. And I'll tell you what every single environmental group does. They go out and they say, no, no, you can't salvage log it. Let Mother Nature take it. So you leave all these standing snags that are dangerous. They're also fuel for future fires. And there's a lot of wood in them that simply rots away to nothing. Now, if you're going to call yourself an environmentalist and say, but we're not going to salvage what's left after a fire, you're not much of an environmentalist. So I was kind of surprised when I saw the news. And let me put it this way. I've been following this project. My brother-in-law, Don, is actually in the trades. And he's been working on that new roof that they put on Portland International Airport. And they spent a gigantic amount of money, $125 million, to put this fancy new roof on PDX. They had originally budgeted about $100 million, but it went up 25% over just a couple of years. I think 2 years it went up by 25%. So there you go. But they've largely finished the project. And I'll admit to you, it's drop dead gorgeous. I mean, they said we're gonna get all of the wood or almost all of the wood from within 300 miles. So they're doing the local sourcing and the minimizing your carbon footprint and all that. But then I noticed one little detail that I had not noticed in the last couple of years in the coverage of this. 78% of the wood for these gigantic wood panels comes from fire salvage around the Sandy M Canyon area in Oregon. And in fact, Freres Lumber says that burnt lumber from the wildfire is usable as long as it's not charred so deep in the wood that it ruins the wood. So they managed to put 78% of that wood to use from salvage logging. So my question would be, after these fires happen, I know what's going to happen this fall and next year. They're going to say, but you can't go in and salvage log it. You can't replant it. So the forest is restored as quickly as possible. We just want Mother Nature to go ahead and take care of restoring the trees on her own. And I think that's just criminal. It's a waste of wood. It creates a dangerous situation because you've got a very good chance. Once a forest has burned, it's great fuel for a future fire. And there are fires that occur in forests in which there's already been one fire, and the remaining wood just catches fire again. You get lightning strikes, you get human caused, and all that. So if it's good enough to say we're going to put a brand new fancy $125 million roof on PDX, and 78% of it is coming from salvaged wood, then why don't we salvage all of the wood that burns in these fires, and then quickly go in and replant the land? So, just my thought. Glad to have you with me on a Wednesday. Always glad to take your phone calls and emails. And I want you to vote in our X poll. City of Portland, which has an abundant drinking water source in the Bull Run. Mayor Ted Wheeler, the lame duck mayor who's going to go back to being a multimillionaire trust fund kid when he leaves office in January, He sent out a press release saying Portland will explore the One Water approach to delivering holistic water, sewer, and stormwater services. So I went and checked with the organization that is pushing One Water, and they point out American Rivers gives examples of how a community might think about changing its water management to a One Water or so-called integrated approach. And number one item on the list, wastewater recycled to become drinking water. So in other words, turning sewage into drinking water. I framed up the question this way. Would you be willing to drink recycled sewage provided by your local government as your drinking water? My answer to that would be no. It's like somebody wrote to me and said, Lars, it's like eating a horse. You could, but why would you? Today's Expo is found at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Let me go to Dennis, our first naysayer of the day. Hey, Dennis, welcome to the program. What do we disagree about today?
It's in reference to the sewage management. I would like to kind of set this things a little straight on that. I was in the military, and part of my job was in petroleum and water purification. And when I was in Virginia in 95 for advanced non-commissioned officer training, we were taken to a sewage plant where they recycled water. They treated it and recycled it. And then you'll be surprised how much that you might actually drink of recycled water. They do a really excellent job of doing the recycling and treating it. But the problem then goes into is how much chemicals they got to use to treat it and to make it purified for drinking. And that leaves kind of a taste that you may not like. But it is it can be treated.
You haven't said anything contradicts with what I've said. I've just said, do you want to drink treated sewage, effluent, and people can say yes or no. And I agree with the man who said it's like eating a horse. You could eat horse meat. But I wouldn't eat horse meat. It'd be my choice. And in the Northwest, where you're not short of water, the military does that. And thanks for your service, by the way. But if you're on some Pacific island and there isn't much water available, I could see why they need to treat wastewater and then recycle it as drinking water. Should we do that in a region that is infamous for its abundance of water?
Well, that I would agree with you. No, it wouldn't be something I'd want to do unless we were in a pinch. And there was either that or no water at all. But I just want to make sure that I don't hear the full comment.
I take your point, Dennis, for everybody who hates smelling chlorine in their drinking water. Portland and Vancouver don't suffer from that very much. But I have a feeling if we start drinking treated effluent, they're going to use a lot more chemicals in it, aren't they?
Yeah, more than likely they would have to if they wanted to treat it properly, because that's what one caller had mentioned about all these different things tossed in there. They got to be able to purify and clean that out of there, too.
That's absolutely right. Dennis, thanks for the call. Ron, we're close to the break, but what's on your mind?
My thing is this. Look along up there north of the east of the San Diego Canyon. From 2017, that fire by Mount Jefferson burned all the way up to the outskirts of Sisters, right?
Yep.
You've got 17 miles along that highway of snags from 2017. What do they think? We're going to continually keep burning, keep not replanting, and everything else? Lars, this is designed by the leftists that's gotten the powers of the National Forest Service or the Oregon Department of Forestry. They do not care about the people. They want everything prior. They want us to live in these gulag apartments and not have individual freedoms, not be able to hunt, not be able to fish. They say they're saving the environment. In reality, they're destroying it, just like they did in 1926 fire down in Tillamook.
Absolutely right. And Ron, those snags are dangerous. They're dangerous during future fires. They're dangerous to people who recreate on public lands. And at least until they've rotted on the stump, they're actually money. And they belong to all of us. And the environmentalists don't want us to touch them. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Pamela on fracking next. Are you selling?
Meanwhile, at Biden's campaign headquarters, they're working on a strategy.
They'll use it against you in the campaign. They'll try to prove that you're incompetent.
I can prove that as well as he can.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
There's no question I'm in favor of banning fracking. So, yeah. And starting
And starting with what we can do on day one around public lands, right?
That is Kamala Harris running for president as the, well, no voters need to be involved in the choice of Kamala Harris. The Democrat Party was not very democratic when they chose her. But that was a soundbite from one of her speeches during her very, very short campaign for the presidency back in 2020, because she didn't win. In fact, she didn't even stay around long enough to get a single vote in a primary. So she is kind of the accidental candidate today. But she was very clear. There's no question. I'm opposed to fracking. I want to ban fracking. Well, what's happening now? Well, Kamala Harris has kind of done a 180. She said, no, I'm not going to ban fracking at all. Now, why the miraculous transformation? In fact, her campaign put out a statement last month, and it said Trump's false claims about fracking bans are an obvious attempt to distract from his own plans to enrich oil and gas executives at the expense of the middle class. Now, that is just wrong on so many levels, but let me get into that in a moment. First, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm always glad to take your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. And if you happen to be a naysayer, you disagree with me or something a guest says on the show, you will get put to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. You can send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And if you care to vote in our poll on X, we put up a brand new poll question every day, and you'll find it at Lars Larson Show on X. Find it on our website at LarsLarson.com. So Kamala Harris has been explicit, or was, as a presidential candidate 4 years ago, saying she planned to ban fracking. And why is that significant? She went on in that statement to say, because the environmental effects of fracking have so many consequences for public health, all of which is categorically untrue. Let me give you a shorthand history, and then I'll get some of your phone calls, of fracking. Fracking has been around since at least the 1960s. That is a testable fact. Fracking has produced about 1 million wells in the United States of America, wells for oil, wells for natural gas, and wells that produce both. And in fact, fracking in the last 20 years has become so good that it's one of the things, a dramatic decrease in the cost of natural gas over the last 20 years. And in fact, natural gas prices are dramatically lower than they were about 20 years ago. So what did that do? It meant that a lot of industries that used to use a lot of electricity generated by coal or a lot of oil products to be able to fuel their industries, they switched to natural gas because it got cheaper. And that's why in the last 20 years, the United States of America has been the biggest country to reduce its carbon dioxide output. If that's what matters to you and you're worried about climate change and you think it's driven by CO2, I don't happen to agree with that. But if that's your big concern, you should be happy with lots of natural gas. So what would happen if there was a fracking ban the way that Kamala Harris proposed just 4 years ago? Well, we would have more expensive natural gas and not as much of it. And then about her campaign statement saying Trump's false claims about fracking bans, is it inaccurate? You heard it with your own ears to say Kamala Harris said there is no question I'm in favor of a ban on fracking. She didn't say on some fracking or the kind that causes environmental damage or whatever. And in fact, I'll remind you of a great little interrogatory between members of Congress and then President Obama's EPA director, who sat right there in front of members of Congress. And she said, well, fracking has caused all kinds of problems with groundwater contamination and other environmental side effects. And one of the members of Congress who'd done his homework the night before asked that EPA director, well, can you give us one example where fracking has contaminated the groundwater? I mean, that was a claim from Obama's EPA director. She said it messes up the water. And he said, okay, can you give us one example? She said, I'll have to get back to you on that. You know what happened when she came back? She was forced to admit under oath to members of Congress that she couldn't come up with one example of fracking causing any problems with groundwater. Well, now, all of a sudden, in the current campaign, Kamala Harris does a 180, and the campaign told Politico she would not ban fracking. Now, the question is, if she changes that readily, I would suggest that her word is not trustworthy. I mean, there was a time when she was Attorney General of California, and she was Kamala the cop. She was putting people in jail for pot, things like that. And then she became, she was running for the U.S. Senate, and all of a sudden her position changed. And then she was Kamala Harris, the border czar, who opened up the border wide and didn't seem to care that literally millions of people were violating the laws of the United States. So she was Kamala, not the cop. And now that she's running again and she realizes she doesn't just need the far left fringe of the Democrat Party, she needs to have the people in the middle as well who are scared to death about the dramatic increase in crime in America during Joe Biden. So all of a sudden, she's become Kamala the cop again. So she flows. She's like a political windsock. She blows whichever direction the political winds are going and whatever might benefit her the most. Let me go to your calls. Let's go to Brett, first of all. Hey, Brett, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Hi, Lars. Thanks for taking my call. I want to make a couple comments on two subjects. First one being a concealed carry. I've been a concealed carry holder for more than half my life. I think if a person has a concealed carry and passes the background check and everything, they should be, regardless of the state their residence is in, they should be able to carry in all 50 states.
I agree.
Anyway.
Like a driver's license. You don't have to check and see if your driver's license works in all 50 states. You know ahead of time it does. But with concealed carry, not quite the same.
Absolutely. I totally am on board with that. But whether that will actually happen in our world, I doubt it.
Well,
that's my take on that.
Let me tell you something, Brett. You know that Kamala Harris is never going to agree with nationwide reciprocity on concealed carry. Take that one to the bank. You know that Donald Trump promised, when I get in office, I will sign a bill to make nationwide concealed carry reciprocity. Why didn't he sign such a bill? A rhino Republican by the name of Paul Ryan, who is House Speaker, had a bill that was being considered by the Congress. Now, to pass a bill in Congress, you need 218 votes. That's one vote more than half of the 435. So did he have that? Well, the bill had 228 co-sponsors. There are already 228 members of Congress who said, I will vote for that bill. Did Paul Ryan put it to a vote? The answer was no. And at the time, we had a Republican majority in the Senate. So you had a bill that would have passed the House, except for Paul Ryan. It probably would have passed the Senate, and Donald Trump had already promised to sign it. So if you want nationwide reciprocity, which presidential candidate do you vote for this year?
Vote for Trump, no doubt. He is the number one candidate to save our country, not only for reciprocity, but for everything else that our country is in peril of right now.
I couldn't agree with you more. And Brett, thank you very much. I appreciate the call. I know you had a second point, but I know we're hard up against a break. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show. Kamala.
If reelected, he will be a dictator on day one.
Versus Trump.
What the hell did I do for democracy? Last week I took a bullet for democracy.
Let the games begin. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm always glad to get your calls, and I'll get right back to those in just a moment. But I want to present you with something. You're going to be told by the mainstream media, well, you know, crime is not going up. Crime has been falling. Just listen to what Kamala Harris, Kamala the cop, has to say about it. She'll tell you, we don't have to worry about anything. Crime is actually going down. Well, the guy who knows the numbers on that, because he is by training a professional economist, formerly a university economist, although I don't think the liberal universities much like Dr. John Lott, who now serves as president of the Crime Prevention Research Center, the author of many great books, including More Guns, Less Crime. Dr. Lott, welcome back.
Well, it's great to talk to you, Lars. Thanks for having me on.
Let's start with a simple one. Is crime going up, down, or staying about flat for the last 3 or 4 years?
I think it's dramatically gone up. I think anybody who goes to a CVS or Walgreens in many parts of the country, sees that things are behind glass now. That wasn't the case. They know that wasn't the case a few years ago. You know, you have to go and get a sales clerk to come out now and stand next to you while you go and read the ingredients on the different packages. You know, it's not like these companies think it's fun or to do that. It's very costly for them to do that. But it's more than just property crimes that have increased. It's violent crimes have also increased very dramatically over the last couple of years. During the Biden administration, we've seen a 43% increase in violent crimes when you look at total crimes that are occurring.
And in fact, you pointed out that part of the problem is we have fewer cops because too many cities around the country agreed with the mob in the streets and said, okay, we'll defund the police. And too many DAs, many of them elected with the help of George Soros, have said, yeah, I'm not going to prosecute a whole bunch of crimes out of a sense of racial justice or social justice. And then you had courts that said, well, we're not going to send people to prison or we're not going to impose the kind of harsh sentences. So all of that has happened and it sent a message to the people who do commit crimes. Hey, not much right. is likely to happen to you. And you've got real numbers to back that up. Would you mind sharing those?
Yeah, look, it's not rocket science. What you're basically going through are the reasons why it's less costly for criminals to go and commit crimes. You look at something like arrest rates in the United States. They've plummeted over the last few years. You take cities over a million, for example. In the 5 years before COVID, the average arrest rate for violent crime, reported violent crimes, was 44%. It started falling in 2020, and by 2022, the average arrest rate for violent crimes, reported violent crimes, was down to 20%. That's a 20%
Well, it's a 50% drop from 40% to 20. It means half as many people are actually being arrested for the crimes they're alleged to have committed, right?
Right. I was just saying it's over a 20 percentage point drop, but right, in terms of percent, going from 44% to 20%, it's a 55% drop overall.
And then prosecution, do you have any numbers on that?
No, the government doesn't collect numbers on that, but it's pretty clear if you look at individual places, you can go and see huge drops that are there. And they've also changed what people are being charged with in terms of crimes. But look, it's even worse than the numbers that we're saying, because the numbers I've been going through are from the FBI. So they're looking at reported crimes. If you're looking at arrests for total violent crimes, reported and unreported, only 8% of violent crimes result in arrest, and only 1% of total property crimes, reported and unreported, result in arrest. I just want to briefly just talk about the fact that the media is out there trying to convince people and the Democrats that crime is going down, that violent crime has fallen. What people need to understand is that there are two sets of numbers, and the media understands this. There's the FBI Uniform Crime Report data on crimes reported to police, and then there's the Bureau of Justice Statistics measure of total crimes reported and unreported. And in the past, prior to 2020, those numbers generally went up and down together. Since 2020, they've gone in opposite directions. And the reason is pretty simple. Well, a major reason is that as arrest rates have plummeted, people don't report as many crimes to the police because it takes time and effort to go and do that. And if you don't think anything's going to happen, what's the point of reporting the crimes?
Exactly.
And so what's happened is that the share of crimes that are unreported has gone up, and it's gone up fairly dramatically. Total crimes has soared. Total violent crimes has gone up by 42% in 2022. If you just compare that to the FBI's measure of reported crimes, then that fell by 2%. You can see the huge difference there and why it's, I mean, if you're going to go to somebody and say, do you want to look at just the crimes that are reported to police, or do you want to look at total crimes? I think most people think it's a no-brainer. You want to look at total crimes there, but the media and the Democrats keep on just wanting to go and put out the numbers with reported crimes.
And by the way, I'd point out one thing I want you to fact check me on. The FBI's UCR, Uniform Crime Report, has been coming out for decades. I've read it for decades. But it depends on local departments reporting right. those numbers in. Hasn't there been a dramatic drop in the number of police departments that are even turning in numbers to the FBI?
Oh, that's exactly right. I mean, it's been a colossal mess. In 2020, you had 97% of police departments were reporting numbers to the FBI. By 2022, you had fewer than half were reporting complete data to the FBI. 31% didn't report any data, and another 24% were only partially reporting data to the FBI. That's a huge change from 97% to less than half reporting complete data to the FBI.
So for example,
they don't put in zeros, but they have to guess. And I personally think they've done a pretty poor job of trying to guess what the missing numbers are there.
I'm talking to Dr. John Lott, the president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. So you cited the words of Secretary of Transportation Pete Buttigieg, who's a former small-town mayor himself, but he was on Fox News Sunday, and he said, if you look this up at home, you know that crime went down under Biden and crime went up under Trump. Why would America want to go back to the higher crime we experienced under Donald Trump? They're gaslighting the public, aren't they?
Well, what they hope people are going to do is that they don't know the difference in statistics. Look, I worked in the Department of Justice. I was senior advisor for research and statistics in the Department of Justice. I was chief economist for the United States Sentencing Commission. So I've seen these data. I know these data well. And the thing is, they're just hoping people won't understand the differences. The media, they'll go and do a Google News search. And if they do a Google News search, they'll just come up with what the news media is reporting all the time in terms of, just only reporting the FBI data. Because I had an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal a while ago. I was hoping, and that's the largest newspaper in the country, I was hoping that would at least force the media to begin to go and recognize that there are these two different sources for crime data that's there. But, you know, it's had no effect. And you have Tim Walz, the vice
New
presidential, Harris's running mate, who's made the same statement multiple times now.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. That's Dr. John Lott, economist and president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
Forget that the same people who refuse to define what a woman is are now pushing you to vote for Kamala because she's a woman. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Man, I feel like a woman.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I got to mention this story out of Tacoma because consider this, and if it was happening in your neighborhood, what would you say? Well, there are plans to take an old church, meaning a former church, and turn it into what they call shared housing for dozens of young adults. Imagine that. And the residents, Como News covered it, residents say they're concerned about traffic, noise, parking. I would go beyond that. I mean, if you're going to bring in a bunch of people who are otherwise homeless and say we're going to provide shared housing for 51 people in this former church, this is an area that is zoned for single-family homes. And in most cases, the code says you can only have 6 people in a group housing setting. And yet, Tim Pavolka, who's quoted in the story, he lives right near the old church. He says, we're close to the university. They're used to having housing that has kids and students in them. The code says you can only have 6, and they're going to put 51 in there. There are bunk beds in shared rooms with strangers, and they've talked about how the tenants could vote on the people that would be moving in. That's not legal. And imagine what it might do to your neighborhood if that happened. And yet this is the kind of nonsense they're pushing on various neighborhoods, that one from Tacoma. to your calls now. And, oh, by the way, I have a feeling a lot of you are calling about our X-Poll question today. So the city of Portland, Portlandia, its mayor, Feckless Ted, sent out a press release this morning, just a few hours ago. And he said the city of Portland will explore, in quote marks, one water approach to delivering holistic water, sewer, and stormwater. And they said it was all part of something being pushed by a private nonprofit called the U.S. Water Alliance. So I went to the website to find out what it's all about. And they said American Rivers, one of the members of the U.S. Water Alliance, gives some examples of how a community could think about changing water management to a one water or integrated approach. And the number one idea on the list, wastewater recycled to become drinking water. So would you be willing to drink recycled sewage provided by your local government as your drinking water? I would say no to that. You can vote any way you like. It's brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. Ron's on the line in Tacoma, where they're thinking about taking that church and turning it into shared housing for 50 in a neighborhood. Ron, welcome back to the program, or welcome to the program.
Yeah, well, you know, here's the thing, Lars. You know, maybe you could help me here. I don't know. Last time I checked, nonprofit, so basically nonprofit organizations are a corporation. And last time I checked, usually, corporations are an individual, which means they're held to the same laws and standards the American public is. Am I correct?
Yeah, I'm not sure where you're going, but yeah, I mean, an organization that does things that are illegal can be prosecuted, and corporations are viewed as having the same rights under the Constitution as individuals. Where are you going with it?
Well, where I'm going is we got NGOs across this country that seem to be getting away with all kinds of crimes, never challenged. And now a friend of mine just brought this to my attention today. He went through a divorce, and he had to get one of those anchor monitoring bracelets until the end of the court case, which he got.
Hold on. He went through a divorce, and they put an ankle bracelet on it? Usually they do that when you're accused of a crime. What crime was he accused of?
No, he went there to get his property. When she wasn't there, it pissed him off, so they said you can't do that anymore and put a bracelet on him. So he went through the whole court thing and got it finished, and he went in there to go get it off. It's all set to go off. And the company here in Tacoma that's responsible for this is a nonprofit, and I have a copy of this letter. I can send it to you. Basically, they're asking for the money to, like, today, before it gets taken off. And he says, well, I don't have it, until I get paid, that kind of thing. And they actually sent this on his phone. You tell me this sounds like extortion to me. It says, I will set the siren off until you make the payment. If it does not work,
wow,
for you
and
to come in, I will write a violation to revoke your case and then file a theft of money.
And that's a private nonprofit NGO, that non-governmental organization that's doing it. Send me the letter. I want to take a look at it, and thank you for that. And I'll get your email, too. Let's go to George. Hey, George, thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Well, turning sewage water into drinking water sounds like a pretty crappy idea to me, Lars, if I ever heard.
Do you remember the opening scenes to that Kevin Costner movie, Waterworld?
No, I didn't see that.
The very first scene is him standing on his, I think, trimaran or catamaran, and he's urinating into a bottle. And then he pumps it through the system and produces this little glass of drinking water. That was the first image that came to mind when Ted Wheeler's press release hit my email.
Well, it's just like a government official to want to feed us manure. Let me see. We have pristine Bull Run water. I know. We'll feed them toilet water. We need a new set of geniuses, Lars.
You know, and what's crazy about it, George, is the Congress gave the city this wonderful resource. I mean, it's 60,000 acres. I've actually been inside the fence. That thing is guarded like Fort Knox. They don't let, in fact, when they do any kind of work up there, if they bring in a piece of equipment, all vehicles, and even chainsaws have to wear a diaper. I mean, they put a little diaper on the chainsaws so that if you set one down on the ground, not one little drop of oil hits this 60,000 acres out of which the Bull Run runs. So they protect it very carefully. And for years, people have been saying, build a third dam. You've got two dams right now. Build a third one. When it rains a lot, let it fill up. You'll have water forever. And the city says, no, no, the environmentalists don't want us to build dams. And I don't think they want us to use that Bull Run water either. So they want us to drink sewage, treated sewage, but sewage all the same. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show.
Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen,
you ready for the big show?
You all right?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is The Lars Larson Show.
With great humility, I am asking you to be excited.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network. Lars. Lars. And now.
And then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host.
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's Wednesday. It's the Radio Northwest Network, and we try to deliver honestly provocative talk on a daily basis. Glad to be with you, and always glad to take your calls. If you want to dial into the best conversation and talk journalism, it's here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, we're going to put you first at 866-439-5277. Our X poll today, would you be willing to drink recycled sewage provided by your local government as your tap water? Portland is joining up with a one water effort from an organization that puts that as the number one suggestion. How can you deliver this kind of thing? Well, you just recycle your sewage, treat it a little bit, make it clean to drink, and everybody will just say yum when they're all done. You can find the question at Lars Larson Show on X, and always brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. Now, I've got another mystery, but Mark Harmsworth is going to help me solve it. Mark is the director of the Small Business Center at Washington Policy. Mark, welcome back to the program. And is there any way, any rational way of explaining why the state of Washington, which seems like a prosperous state to me, I live in the state of Washington, but why do we have such a high unemployment rate compared to the rest of the country?
Well, thanks for having me on, Horace. Yeah, it's a mystery wrapped up in an enigma, but when you really look at it, what it really boils down to is we have a very high tech influence in the state, and the other thing that really doesn't help Washington is the super regressive taxation and the way in which the state of Washington goes after small businesses and makes their lives difficult, even just trying to create the most simple jobs with unfunded mandates on employment taxes and just jobs within in the state where you're effectively serving the state. I know of small business owners, including one of my own businesses, where I have somebody on staff and all they do basically is either bill the customer or take care of state oversight. So in Washington, our unemployment rate, we're basically fifth, sixth, seventh in the nation, depending on when you pull the numbers, worst in the nation, that is. And compared to South Dakota, North Dakota, which are in the 2% range for unemployment, we're at 4.9. Oregon's much better than Washington. They're not seeing the loss of jobs that we've seen here in Washington state. And it really comes down to the way in which the government here is treating its small businesses.
Well, it's a set of choices. But when you outline it that way, if you say, you mean South Dakota and North Dakota have a rate that is 150, if you wanted to increase it, that Washington state's rate is 150% higher than the states of South Dakota and North Dakota. So it is possible to achieve that, even though I have to say my granddaughter was born in North Dakota, so I like the state for that reason. But, you know, other than oil and a lot of empty space and a strong wind that seems to blow all the time, it doesn't have nearly as much to recommend it as the state of Washington. I mean, by all other measures, you'd think the state of Washington would be much more prosperous.
Yeah, you'd think so. We have our own wind that seems to come out of Olympia quite a lot, too. So, but that's another issue. But if you think about the Dakotas, I mean, their population's obviously a lot less, and they've got some industries there that we don't have in Washington. But in Washington state, we've got large companies like Amazon and Microsoft, and now we're starting to see Google and Facebook open up large employee bases here on the east side of the lake. And they've gone through a lot of layoffs in the last few few years. The pandemic obviously didn't help, but even when you take that into account, the unemployment side of things, we just haven't seen that recovery. In fact, the unemployment benefit fund, which is the money that the state collects from businesses and is charging them more now after the pandemic to recover the losses made because of the government mandated shutdown, where everyone lost their jobs and were made unemployed, particularly in the retail and hospitality industries, we're starting to see that come back up. But that has not recovered to its pre-pandemic levels, which is about $5 billion. It's going to take another 4 or 5 years before we see that. And the unemployment rate isn't actually going to predicted to change significantly over those years. So you will see new hiring in the technology space. But with the overburdensome regulations out of Olympia, a lot of small businesses are just choosing not to start here in Washington. And we're one of the highest states for new businesses failing in their first few years as well. And it's because of this regressive tax code that we have here in Washington.
Well, and when you mention the unemployment fund, I mean, I pay it on my employees, but if you raise the rate, then every time a business either wants to add employees or if somebody wants to start a new business, now you've piled up, you made the hurdle a lot higher for you to have to jump over to get that done. So you provided a real disincentive for companies to either add employees or to start new ventures.
Yeah, and in Washington, additionally to that, and not just the fees that you get with the unemployment, and let's sort of summarize here, the state came in, made you lay the employees off, you've rehired them after the pandemic, and now they're making you pay for the money that the state paid them while they're off, when they were unemployed. But we also have the business occupations tax, which is based on gross receipts. So you can, as a business, make $1 million a year. The state will tax you whether you lose $2 million or make a profit. You still pay tax on it, incredibly regressive tax. And it's one of the reasons Washington small businesses fail so much in the first few years because of all the taxes they're paying, whether they're successful or not.
Well, and in fact, that seems like one of the ones that would be easy to fix. I realize I'm not a lawmaker, but if you said, why don't we tax to have the same tax to, you know, if you assume you have to collect the same amount of money to supply government services, which I think we could cut back the government services in a whole bunch of areas that are not essential. But having said that, if you said, we're going to collect the tax, why don't we collect a slightly higher tax on the money you actually make? Instead of, but could you do that under Washington's Constitution? Because going out to a business that said, yeah, we took in $5 million, but we lost $500,000 last year, and say, well, you're paying taxes on $5 million, whether you lost money or not. If they tax you only on the money you actually made, that seems a whole lot more equitable, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's basically what the proposal is that we've put out as an organization, is to look at the sort of the net rather than the gross side of things. But to put it in perspective, the state budget has also exploded over the last 3 or 4 years. In 2018, it was $42, $43 billion for a two-year budget. Now we're up in the high 60s, low 70s. So the state has got plenty of money. That's not the problem. They're already taxing us too much as it is. So they've got plenty of wiggle room in here to go back and look at these things like the business occupations tax, the licensing tax, you know, the monopoly that the labor and industries group has got, which costs a lot of money for insurance for these employers. So there's plenty of things that we can work on here, simple reforms that would help our small businesses tomorrow get a head start.
You know, it's funny, Mark, because states are always saying, we want to make the state that people want to come and visit as tourists. They care about that. How about saying, we want to make a state that's an attractive place to do business and to hire people and to pay salaries. I'd prefer they focused on that. That's Mark Harmsworth from Washington Policy. Coming up, we've got to talk about some immigration issues.
Sayers go to the head of the line at the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I'll get back to your phone calls and emails shortly, but I got to tell you about this. Two things about immigrants to the United States of America. I saw this brilliant interview, and it was last night, and I was watching on social media, and I wish I knew who to credit for this interview, but it's a young lady. and she was interviewing this couple, a Chinese-American couple, who are obviously very proud that they made the decision to emigrate legally to the United States of America. And so this young lady is talking to them. She happens to also be a Chinese-American, and that comes up in the conversation. And they're explaining to her, she asks them, why are you wearing this MAGA gear? Why are you supporting Donald Trump? And here's what they told her.
Why Chinese Americans support Trump? All right. So the reason is the Democrat administration, Biden administration, lead this country towards socialism and eventually towards communist dictatorship. We came from China. We know this is the way. This is not like people here don't understand what is a communist is. We know communist is. What a communist is. That's why we support Trump.
Yeah, I thought that was a pretty sensible explanation. We're from China. We lived in China a long time. We immigrated to the United States. We've seen communism up close. We understand that the Democrat Party is driving America toward communism and that eventually, or toward socialism initially, and that goes to communist dictatorship after that. And I've sometimes had people say, well, no, you don't understand. Socialism doesn't always lead to communism. Yes, it does, because both of them have to be done at the point of a gun. Now, some people take offense to that. They say, oh, hold on, you can have peaceful socialism. I said, really? Somebody comes to you and says, hey, you've got a very nice house. This person over here doesn't have any house at all. We're going to take some of what you have so that people who don't have as much can have more. And the government is going to do that. Now, are you willingly going to go along with that and say, sure, feel free, help yourself, take some of what I have and give it to somebody else. Don't make them earn it, but give it to them from the person who actually owns it. Yes, in most cases, I would say nearly all, that has to be done at the point of a gun. But then there was this interesting interchange. I mentioned to you that the young reporter who was talking to this Chinese-American couple, she threw in her own personal history and asked about that, and also about whether or not Donald Trump, the orange man, is one of those anti-immigrant people.
This is really interesting because I'm also Chinese American myself. So I
you haven't lived in China, I guess.
I did. I grew up in China.
Oh,
I grew up in China till I was 17. I'm from Shanghai, but yeah, I don't want to talk about my opinions because I'm a journalist. So I just want to like hear more about your opinions. You know, as immigrants, a lot of people might say that Trump is anti-immigrants or you know.
Trump is not anti-immigrants
at all.
It's just against illegal immigrants.
Right.
It must be lawfully.
Yeah, it must be lawfully. Do you understand what's going on there? This young lady who says, oh, no, it's not about my opinion. But she says a lot of people would say Trump is anti-immigrant. Well, let me point this out. He's married to an immigrant. He has a child by an immigrant. He is not anti-immigrant. He's saying if you do it legally, come to America. We have legal immigration, more than 1 million people a year, and they're allowed to bring in members of their family, an average of 3 members of family for every legal immigrant who comes in. What he's against is people just flooding across our border. And this has to be explained to a young lady who herself is an immigrant to the United States. And this is where the I guess, cognitive disconnect comes. Because you have somebody who went through the entire process to come with her parents and emigrate to America as a teenager at the age of 17. And she probably didn't experience all of the things that her parents had to do to make that happen. But I'm willing to bet if she was 17, and dad and mom were saying we have to go through all this process, we have to fill out all these forms, we have to make sure that we assure our new home country, America, that we're not going to become welfare cases, the law says a public charge, but we will come and we will be productive. And all of this has to be explained to her. I don't blame the older Chinese-American couple for saying to her, you don't really know what it's like. In fact, I suspect that having come from Shanghai and have the resources to come along with your parents to the United States, I'm willing to bet her parents are reasonably well-heeled and that they were able to come to the United States in a way that was very, very nice, okay? And so what she experienced in a communist country as a member probably of an affluent, somewhat elite family is probably entirely different from what the other immigrants in that interview said. That's why they saw, said, we saw communism up close. We understand the Democrat Party is pushing America towards socialism and eventually to communism. Now, the other thing I wanted to mention to you, the Minnesota Republican Party and the Republican National Committee are now demanding an investigation in Minnesota because a non-citizen came forward claiming he got a primary ballot in the mail without even registering to vote. In what was described as potentially not an isolated incident, the non-citizen, who happens to be legally present in Minnesota, reported to the state Republican Party he didn't register to vote. He didn't ask for a ballot. And yet he's currently on the Minnesota voter rolls, and he got a primary ballot in the mail. Now, if you wonder, Lars, how could that possibly happen? I can tell you exactly how it happened. So many states have gone to automatic registration. That is, if you go get a driver's license or a picture ID from the DMV, they automatically register to vote. They don't automatically put you in one party or the other. Oftentimes, they'll put you down as an independent. But then, if you're on the voter rolls as a registered voter, having not done it on your own, because I think what's happening is this. It is illegal for you to register to vote in the United States if you're a foreign national, even if you're here legally, as this person was, that you are told right on the form, if you register to vote and you sign your name here, that you're committing a crime if you're not a citizen. It's a felony crime. You can go to prison for 5 years for it. Now, it doesn't get prosecuted near often enough. But I think the Democrats have decided what we're going to do is just go ahead and register people to vote, whether they are legally here or whether they are citizens or not. And when they get the ballot in the mail, they'll probably think, well, I got a ballot in the mail. I'll go ahead and I'll vote the ballot. If they had signed their name on the form, they would have committed a crime. But if the system automatically registers you to vote without your knowledge, without your say-so, they get past that problem. I mean, the Democrat Party knows that there are legal residents of the United States who are not citizens. They know that it's against the law for them to register to vote. But if somebody else registers them to vote without their knowledge, and then they're sent a ballot, and for a general election ballot, party doesn't matter. You're going to get a general election ballot with Kamala Harris's name on it. The ballot is also going to have Donald Trump's name on it. Now, if you look at that ballot and you think, well, I want to take part. I've moved to America. I'm an immigrant to America. I want to take part in the process. If you don't spend too much time thinking about it, you might just be tempted to fill that ballot out and cast a vote. And only if you know the law are you going to know that what you're doing is actually a felony crime in the United States. I think the Democrats are counting on the fact that many people either won't know that, number one, or they do know it and they don't care. And they go ahead and they vote anyway. Glad to be with you and always glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show. Exercising the right to free speech every day. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails in a moment, but I've been really looking forward to talking to Mark Henry. He is Judge Mark Henry, the Honorable of Galveston County, Texas. And Mark, or Judge Henry, I want you to first explain to people, because most of the time when folks hear the title like judge, they think of a guy or a gal in a black robe sitting behind a bench just hearing trials. But judge in Galveston County and most of Texas is something that's entirely different. It's kind of a meld of county administrator and judge at the same time.
Yes, sir. You're absolutely correct. Every county in Texas, there's 254 counties, have an elected county judge, which is similar to the mayor of the county. So we have both administrative, legislative, judicial, and executive functions. So
you wear a lot of hats.
I love it. I wear a lot of hats, and I love it every day.
Well, and there are other things I want to talk to you about. We would mention your Air Force career, 21 years, but you were in the classified part of space operations. So is it the case that if you told me about it or told my audience about it, you'd have to kill all of us?
That's a great line. I love it. The truth is that everything I know that's classified has probably been declassified, but I don't have access to a classification guide, so I don't know.
So, or it's sitting in Joe Biden's garage. Hey, you scored. It is entirely possible, right next to the Corvette. So, Judge Henry, you scored a major victory over the Biden DOJ, and I want you to explain that to my audience, if you would.
Sure. About 2 years ago, we had to redistrict our county into four precinct commissioners, and I'm elected countywide, but the four precinct commissioners. The DOJ and the NAACP basically said, if you don't create a protected Democrat precinct, we're going to sue you. To which I responded, well, then just go ahead and sue me because I'm not going to do that anymore. It's a concept called a coalition district, which is just legal fiction. That term doesn't exist anywhere in any statute anywhere. And we just refused to do it anymore. 10 years ago, we had to get DOJ pre-clearance, but that went away in 2016. So I no longer had to get their permission for the maps I wanted to adopt. Galveston County Commissioners Court, which is the legislative body of the county, adopted the map that we thought was fair and equitable. They didn't like it because it didn't protect a Democrat seat. They sued us. They won at the trial court level, which we knew they would because the precedent law was out there. But we went back to the Fifth Circuit. The entire court reheard the case and said, no, we were wrong 40 years ago when we said coalition districts are okay. They are no longer okay. They don't exist. They're gone. So every state under the Fifth Circuit, which is Texas, Louisiana, and Mississippi, can go back now and get rid of all their coalition districts.
Well, how in the world could it ever be? I mean, help my audience wrap their heads around this, and I'm a non-lawyer, so help me with it, too. How can it be legal to say we're going to engineer a precinct or a district or whatever in such a way to make sure that a Democrat will always win? That can't be constitutional, is it?
Well, it's not in the statutes anywhere, but 40 years ago, some, I would say ingenious or notorious, one of the two lawyers came up with this concept, and certain courts bought off on it and said, okay, we can buy that, I guess. Maybe that's what Congress meant to do, even though they didn't write that down. And, you know, and Congress has had many chances to amend the Voting Rights Act and include coalition districts if they wanted to. They never have. So up until now, no one ever stood up to them and said, no, just sue us. If you want to sue me over this thing that doesn't exist, go ahead. But they did it to us. Galveston County has kind of reshaped the legal landscape and the political landscape in the Fifth Circuit's reign, and hopefully it'll go up to the Supreme Court and they'll make it the law of the entire land.
I was going to ask you about that, because since you won at the Fifth Circuit, it only applies in the Fifth Circuit. That's the way the, you know, the federal courts work. But yes. What could bring it to the Supreme Court so they could extend it to the rest of the country?
This case needs to go to the Supreme Court. The Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals agrees with the Fifth. The Eleventh Circuit generally follows the Fifth. So that's, you've created split courts of appeal around the country. We need to have one law across the land. The Supreme Court has already got this on their radar because the plaintiffs asked that they stop our maps that we adopted. The Supreme Court in a 6-3 vote said, no, we're not going to stop those maps. They can go ahead and use them. So it's already on their radar. We feel good about them ruling in the way that's favorable to us and to the nation, in my opinion. And eventually we have to get there one way or another.
So that means that the losing side in this case, not your side, but the losing side, may be the ones who actually push this to the Supreme Court and force the Supreme Court to extend it to the rest of the country, assuming you win.
We think, you know, they've got 90 days from the date of the ruling, which was about 2 weeks ago now, to do something. So we're kind of waiting for them to see what they're going to do next. If they don't, we may, because it really needs to have national clarity and not be split depending on which court of appeals area you're in.
Now, I want to ask you about one other thing, if you don't mind, Judge Henry.
Sure.
Okay, because I wish we had a federal government that ran within its means, and I want to see states start to spend, and counties and cities and everything else spend within their means. So using Galveston County, they say that since you got into office as the, you know, judge slash county administrator, you've cut taxes 46% and you've paid off over 50% of the county's bonded debt. You got to be one of the only local governments in America that's actually cutting taxes and paying off the credit card.
That's correct, because I truly am a Republican and a conservative, and I follow those guidelines. When we get additional revenue from increased property taxes, we don't blow it on something new. We give it back to the taxpayers. So we don't see it as a slush fund for us. We see it as the taxpayers' money, and it goes right back to them.
I mean, is that easy? You make it sound like anybody could do it, but apparently the folks on Capitol Hill can't figure it out.
It apparently is extremely difficult. I don't know why it's so easy for us. We have a majority Republican commissioner's court. There's only five, and that's the same for every county in Texas. So I've had no real problem getting commissioners to agree with me that we don't need to go out and find new ways to spend this new revenue. We need to give it back to the people who paid into it.
That sounds like a great idea. Now, could I drag you at all into the Tim Walz situation? I have not served, but I give all kinds of honor to all those who have served, including my mom and dad. And I kind of resent the idea that Governor Walz ran around calling himself over and over again a command sergeant major when in fact he didn't retire out as that, and he didn't make that rank, and he left before he was deployed to Iraq.
Yeah, and I will say something similar. I will say anyone who put the uniform on and raised your right hand, you wrote a blank check, and I appreciate that.
Yes.
I cannot appreciate making statements that are intentionally misleading to inflate your military credentials. I have never, ever said I was a fighter pilot, because I wasn't. And if I did, someone should call me out and say, that's garbage. You were not a fighter pilot. Stop saying that. So I just get irritated at people misrepresenting their military credentials.
Okay, given your background, were you glad to see that we created a Space Force? Because I understand that was a little bit, I like the idea, but there were people saying we don't need this, and President Trump said, yeah, we do, because if we don't, the rest of the world's going to get ahead of us on this, and when China does that, that's not good.
It was long overdue. I would be in the Space Force now, but I was in space operations in the Air Force, and on several occasions, an issue would come up where we would get additional funding for something, and the Air Force is, I hate to say it like it's mean, but it's not. It's kind of pilot-driven for pilots. Well, the space operations guys were every bit as critical as pilots were, but we kind of got told various things at various times about, this is a pilot kind of community and yada, yada. So it was long overdue. I'm glad they're kind of autonomous now. They can have funding that gets to stay within Space Operations and Space Command or Space Force now, and not be potentially scavenged off for some new aircraft platform, which is also important. Not saying they're not.
Okay.
But we had many opportunities in space.
But when the Air Force gets extra money, the pilots just say more planes. That's and the money goes to more planes and not anything else. I understand why it might end up
there. Yes.
It was there. Judge Henry, it is a pleasure to have you on. Thanks for the work you've done for the people in Galveston County. Now, take that example, folks, and go to your local county commissioner and say, hey, instead of taking that money and just finding new ways to spend it, why don't you pay off the debt and drop the tax rate, just like they did in Galveston County. Back in a moment. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. With me on the phone.
Casting the sound of freedom. Here's Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. This segment of the show brought to you by Oregon Medical Centers, the regenerative medical specialist, Oregon Medical Centers. And our X poll today, would you be willing to drink recycled sewage water provided by your local government as your drinking water? Portland may be on its way to doing that. Ted Wheeler announcing today that they're going to explore the one water approach for delivering what Ted Wheeler calls holistic water, sewer, and storm water. And when I went to the website of the non-governmental private organization that does this, called the U.S. Water Alliance, they explained that, one of the biggest ideas is wastewater recycled into drinking water. I know. Sounds tasty, doesn't it? To your calls, and our first naysayer this hour. Jeff, welcome to the program. We love naysayers. What do you and I disagree about that makes you a naysayer today?
Oh, I just think, like, the opening of your show, you should change it a little bit. Like, when it opens up with, where Trump saying we're going to get rid of the Biden crime family, there should be a pause, and then we're going to replace it with the Trump crime family.
Can you tell me what crimes we're talking about?
Just in future, the future crime family.
Future crime. Anyway, that sounds like a movie like Minority Report. Is there such a thing as anticipating the future crimes of Donald Trump?
Well, you know, already his convictions for all his other crimes, you know.
Conviction for fraud where nobody lost any money and the alleged victims wanted to do business with him again? That fraud?
And none of his family are allowed to sit on any of the boards of any charities in this country because of the fraud that they perpetrated there. But anyway, what I called about was, do you think if Trump's mental acuity goes down to the point like Biden was, do the Republican establishment have the nerve to take him out?
Sure.
And if it looks like Harris is going to win it in a walkaway, a runaway, do you think Trump is going to accept losing and accept defeat? Or is he going to walk away?
As long as they don't cheat.
Do you think he's going to walk away and quit? Or is he going to face the ignominy of losing to a woman?
No, I think, you know, Jeff, to give you an honest answer, I know you're being kind of snarky, but I refuse to join you in that. I think that if Donald Trump were...
No, I'm serious. I am serious.
Well, I'm serious, too.
Serious.
I think if Donald Trump legitimately lost the election, and there's no cheating the way there was in 2020, that Trump will still stay involved in the public sphere. I think he's a powerful force in American politics. And I think that he will stay involved. Just to answer your theoretical question, let me ask you a question based on what you said. Do you think Kamala Harris is going to win running away with it in November?
I do not know. That's one thing. But with you seeing, I mean...
Well, hold on. You asked me a hypothetical. I answered it. You just dodged mine. Let me ask you this. Do you plan to vote for Kamala Harris?
I'll answer your question, the hypothetical.
Yeah.
If she gets the support from the log cabin Republicans, the other Republicans, and all the other people that are flocking to her, plus minorities, and everybody else that you possibly see that's going to her, it could be a runaway, and yes, she could walk away with this.
Well, then, Jeff, let me ask you this.
Not that she will, but she could.
Am I right in guessing you plan to vote for Kamala Harris?
Yes, because I think...
I just wanted to find out, if you're voting for Kamala, what is it you see in her that makes you think she'd be a competent president?
It's not what I see in her. It's I truly believe this country cannot survive 4 years of Donald Trump and Matt Gaetz.
Well,
tell
me something, Jeff, be honest. During the last 3.5 years, have your prospects, financial or otherwise, improved?
Mine has stayed the same.
Oh, it stayed the same. So you didn't go down.
I'm old and retired. I'm 70. I'm retired and I'm on Social Security.
I assume you still
I don't have a lot of money. I'm not in the stock market.
Jeff, I assume you still eat, right?
Oh yes.
Food is up 21%. Is your food budget able to handle that?
Okay. Let's you know,
no, yes or no? Start with yes or no. Answer the question, then give me the explanation.
Prices have gone up for different reasons, okay?
Has your income gone up enough to keep you in the same place you were 3.5 years ago?
Maybe. I'm not sure. I don't really check on it that.
Look, I would think if my income had gone up 21% or, you know, let's say 19% in the last 3 years, I'd notice. And I can guarantee you, Jeff, my income did not go up 19% in the last 3 years. Are you telling me that you say you're okay for money, your income would go up by 19% and you didn't notice?
I know you wanted to change the subject.
No, I'm asking you a serious question.
No, I know you want to deflect. You want to deflect from what I was talking about.
Well, what do you want to talk about next?
Being able to survive.
Well, what was
Trump.
The other thing you want to bring up? Something new. What?
No, about surviving Trump for the next 4 years.
Well, that's what I'm trying to get to. Is when you say surviving, let me ask you this: during the 4 years of Donald Trump, what went wrong with your life that caused you to say surviving Trump? What terrible things happened to you during the 4 years of Trump?
I'll tell you what Trump did strategically that was so incompetent and ignorant. He didn't recognize and allow the Kurds a country. He turned them over to his buddy Erdogan. We could have had an ally with the Kurds.
Hold on. How did that affect your life, Jeff? I mean, I'm asking about things involving your life and your time. I like the Kurds, too. I think they're a great group of people, and they deserve their own country. But that's the biggest thing on your list is the future of the Kurds. I'm asking you, can you still pay your bills with everything going up so much in just 3 years?
You want to talk about what you want to talk about?
I'm asking about... Jeff, you're telling me that we can't survive 4 years of Donald Trump, and your number one concern is whether or not the Kurds, and I am sympathetic to the Kurds, but your number one concern is whether or not the Kurds have a country or not. And I'm asking you, can you feed yourself or not? I think mine's more relevant. You got the Lars.